Today is day 27 of the federal government shutdown. Thought this would be a good time to try to take some comfort in the existence of another developed nation government that seems even more hell-bent on ritual suicide than our own. The world's fifth largest economy, the United Kingdom. The parliament is flailing over its looming deadline for a separation from the European Union. On Tuesday, parliament rejected the latest soft exit proposal that was negotiated by Conservative Prime Minister Theresa May. That went down by an overwhelming, humiliating margin of more than 2-1. Yesterday, parliament narrowly rejected a no-confidence motion that would have triggered elections to replace the government. Now, Theresa May says it is back to the bargaining table. Here she is in the parliament yesterday.
Pleased that this House has expressed its confidence in the government tonight. And we have a responsibility to identify a way forward that can secure the backing of the House. To that end, I've proposed a series of meetings between senior parliamentarians and representatives of the government over the coming days. And I would like to invite the leaders of parliamentary parties to meet with me individually. And I would like to start these meetings tonight.
Again, Theresa May is going to have to negotiate some kind of solution that would flip around 150 votes in Parliament. And she says she wants to do that by Monday. Opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn of the Labour Party has conditions.
Last night, the House rejected the government's deal, emphatically. A week ago, the House voted to condemn the idea of a no-deal Brexit. Before there can be any positive discussions about the way forward, the government must remove clearly, once and for all, the prospect of the catastrophe of a no-deal Brexit of the EU and all the chaos that would come as a result of that. And I invite the Prime Minister to confirm now that the government will not countenance a no-deal Brexit from the European Union.
As a side note, I wish our Congress sounded like that.
I was just about to say, we're so boring.
The hard exit that Jeremy Corbyn was talking about would mean leaving the European Union with no deals in place on trade, on migration, and so forth. That will happen all on its own in about 6 weeks, March 29th. That could mean borders snapping shut, 35% tariffs, millions of people losing their rights to stay where they are currently living, both people from the UK living in Europe and Europeans living in the UK, and massive pressures on the British economy. Joining us to sort through what's next is Alex Dean. He's a political correspondent with The Prospect magazine. Joins us over Skype. Good morning to us. Good afternoon to you.
Afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you start by kind of catching us up on developments? What was in the latest proposal that proved so unpopular on the floor of Parliament?
Of course. I mean, there are all sorts of things in Theresa May's deal that MPs don't like. And I imagine if there are some parliamentarians who would be rejecting the deal, I think, under almost any circumstances, particularly the hardline Brexiteers. Certainly, the aspect of May's deal that MPs most object to is this thing called the Northern Ireland backstop. This is essentially an insurance policy to guarantee no hard border on the island of Ireland. It's complicated. It arises basically because Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland are going to diverge in some way because of Brexit. And how can the two halves diverge without there being a border imposed? It's not at all obvious. So this backstop's designed to kind of provide some insurance and keep the Good Friday Agreement intact, which is obviously incredibly important for the Northern Irish peace process. But it would mean all sorts of problems that the MPs see, such as close alignment with Europe for Northern Ireland and indeed the UK as a whole, which Brexiteers don't like, and potentially a different constitutional status for Northern Ireland. This all sounds very arcane and technical, I know, but essentially it's an issue of the integrity of the United Kingdom and its four constituent nations. And a lot of MPs feel very strongly indeed about that. And I think that's the main reason Theresa May's deal is falling, you know, on such a hostile crowd.
Let's take a second to unpack that and assume a very low level of baseline political literacy about Ireland and Europe among our audience. Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. The Irish Republic is part of Europe. They share an island with a large land border across it, and the fact that there are no checkpoints or guards or fencing or armed people on that border is an achievement of a peace process that took nearly a century to pull off, right?
That's exactly right, yeah. And I mean, essentially the problem is that you're trying to take two halves of this island, currently aligned on things like goods regulations and product standards and free movement of people and so on. And you're trying to split those two halves down the middle. One half will still be in Europe, the other won't. When you do that, you need to, it seems at least to me, impose a border. But the reimposition of a border in Ireland after years of peace, after an incredibly hard-won, you know, negotiated settlement 20 years or so ago, John Major, Tony Blair, the Good Friday Agreement, the reimposition of a border is politically fraught, to say the least. And essentially, the backstop is designed to avoid a border between Northern Ireland and the Republic by instead drawing one down the Irish Sea. But that would that just pushes the issue around to a different area, because it would mean that the mainland UK was then divided from Northern Ireland. So it's all about the integrity of the constituent parts of the United Kingdom in light of the fact that we're trying to avoid a hard Irish border and a return to the violence of the past.
So Theresa May's governing coalition, the Conservatives do not have a majority on their own. She relies on the votes of parliamentarians from Northern Ireland to stay in power, from the Democratic Unionist Party. Where are they landing on the deals she's been negotiating?
Yeah, so the Democratic Unionist Party, probably more so than any other group in Parliament, is opposed to this backstop idea of the border down the Irish Sea. And their reasoning for that is, I mean, essentially, the clue's in the name, Democratic Unionist Party. They fiercely want Northern Ireland to stay aligned in terms of regulations, constitutions, and so on, with the rest of the UK. So they don't support Theresa May's deal, but they do support her in a confidence vote, as you were saying in your news bulletin. It's an incredibly constitutionally novel situation that Britain's got itself into, actually, because traditionally the government, if it commands the support of MPs in the House of Commons, then its key policy plank will also command the support of MPs in the Commons. What we've got at the moment is this incredibly unusual paralysis where, as you saw with the vote on Tuesday, the government's key policy plank absolutely does not command support of the Commons, and it was voted down by a margin of 2-1. Yet in the subsequent confidence vote in the government triumphed. So there's confidence in the government, but not in any of its ideas. It's a very unusual situation.
So is anybody advancing an alternative to what Theresa May put on the table? For instance, those MPs from Northern Ireland, if they don't want a virtual border across the Irish Sea, do they want one across the island they live on?
So it's my own view that the DUP have kind of shot themselves in the foot here from the start, and they're now outraged about a situation that was entirely predictable and indeed was predicted by a lot of people. So I don't have much sympathy actually for the way the DUP has played this. In terms of alternatives coming from other MPs and other places, not enough from the Labour Party, I'd say. I think there's been a bit of a dereliction of duty there, actually. But certainly from, or at least not from the Labour leadership, but certainly if you look to the back benches and MPs who aren't actually in government, aren't actually part of the Labour leadership, but in some cases very experienced, have been kind of clubbing together, in some instances on cross-party lines. So right-wing Conservatives and left-wing Labour members of Parliament to try and sort out some way through this impasse. There's politicians like Dominic Grieve, who's a very fine legal mind, who was Attorney General under David Cameron. Conservative MP Nick Bowles is another who's kind of desperately trying to scramble together some sort of plan. And this leadership is coming from unusual places, is how I'd put it.
Yeah, but I guess my question is, like, specifically with the question of how you leave Europe without splitting Ireland. The people who are voting against Theresa May's negotiated packages on that basis, are they proposing any other way to do it, or are they just in the Remain camp that Britain shouldn't be exiting at all?
Right, so a lot of them are in the Remain camp. others are in such a soft Brexit camp that the issue doesn't arise, because they think that while we should, in the kind of the letter of the law, leave the EU's institutions, political institutions of ever closer union, we'd remain in some bodies like the single market and the customs union, which govern things like tariffs. And we could technically, by the letter of technical detail on the paper, leave the European Union, but not in such a significant way that would mean any divergence and any need for a border. There's certainly some MPs in that category. Then there's yet another group of MPs kind of going ever more Brexitwards. There's another group of MPs, including the Labour leadership, who think that Britain should come out in favour of a permanent customs union. Now, that wouldn't solve the issue completely, because there might be divergence on things other than tariffs. The customs union only addresses tariffs. I'm aware this is, all sounds quite arcane, but it is on these points that British politics is now turning, bizarrely. So people like Jeremy Corbyn think that we should negotiate a permanent customs union. The problem is that would preclude us striking our own free trade deals around the world, which for the right-wing Tory Brexiteers was one of the main prizes of Brexit. So there's no consensus around that. For the government, it's got this weird... So the backstop has actually been fudged and watered down, and the term was de-dramatised, because originally it was going to be even more controversial than it is now. It was going to be customs checks down the Irish Sea and regulatory checks. It's now just regulatory checks. So actually, I wouldn't say I'm fiercely anti-backstop. I think it's far from ideal, but I think if you're going to leave the European Union, I think that maintenance of the Irish peace process is so important. Avoiding a hard land border and tearing up the Good Friday Agreement should be such a priority that actually the backstop, technically speaking, it is maybe the best of a group of bad options. But clearly a lot of MPs don't feel that way, and that's why Theresa May's deal was defeated by such a huge margin on Tuesday.
Why isn't anybody in Parliament just kind of holding up their hand and shouting, let's just stay?
Well, some people are, but it's an interesting thing. The referendum was advisory in law, and we were never under any obligation to trigger Article 50 to set this process in motion. But it's difficult to overstate the political weight that was attached to the referendum. And the Prime Minister at the time, David Cameron, used the phrase, we will implement what you decide. And, you know, that's what was on the government leaflets that went out to millions of households. I think basically MPs were, and indeed still are, cowed by the referendum result. Somewhat understandable. There's a fear that if we cancel Brexit, millions of voters who never voted before finally voted in 2016 in the hope that they were going to be listened to, not with this party system and thinking their vote wouldn't matter. Every vote mattered in that referendum. I mean, I think every vote matters in every election, but this was the way the optics were at the time. It was a momentous generational decision of people finally trying to take back control in the slogan of the Leave campaign. And I think there's a real fear about what might happen if politicians go back on a promise that they made. Now, personally, I think that I share the concerns. I think that Brexit won't deliver what the Leave camp promised. And that's just as worrying as any of the other outcomes. So actually, I think probably a second referendum is the way to go. But I don't say that with a light heart. I think it's very serious.
Are there indications that public opinion has moved substantially since the time of the referendum?
It's moved a bit Remainwards. And one of the main reasons for that is actually simply demographic shift. Old people were more likely to vote Leave. Young people were more likely to vote Remain. And, you know, there's more, less old people, you know, there's a kind of conveyor belt of just sheer demographic reality.
That's changing. Old folks dying.
Yes, exactly. Young people coming up and getting the vote. But what's interesting is actually some polls today showing that since Theresa May's deal was voted down, it swung even more Remainwards. So there seems to be this kind of public fatigue with the parliamentary shenanigans and increasingly Brexit fatigue and just that crushing sense of just wanting to get it, you know, just wanted to make the whole problem go away, I think is actually probably one of the most powerful forces in British politics right now. And I think a lot of voters would settle for that. There's all sorts of problems with a second referendum, though. I mean, I think there's all sorts of problems with every outcome. And as I said, and I'm in favour of a second vote, there's all sorts of difficulties, including what question you actually put on the ballot paper.
Well, wouldn't the logical question to put to the voters be whatever the negotiated package is? I mean, the initial referendum was on an abstraction, leaving the European Union, without significant information in front of the voters of what that would entail. Wouldn't the follow-up referendum be 35% tariffs? Here's what happens to people of UK nationality living and working in the European Union. Here's what happens to Northern Ireland. Do you approve this entire package or not?
I basically agree that the 2016 vote was, you know, not really done as a legitimate referendum. I think you can't vote on a negative, and, you know, Remain was the status quo. Everyone knew what that meant. No one really knew what Leave meant, and we've been finding out to our pain over the last 2.5 years. We do kind of know what Leave means now. On the actual specific question on the ballot paper, it's the question is, if people vote to reject the Prime Minister's deal, do we stay or do we leave with no deal? And if the options are stay or the Prime Minister's deal, then hard Brexiteers will be absolutely furious because they'll think that their option isn't represented on the ballot paper at all. And if, on the other hand, the options are the Prime Minister's deal or not leaving without a deal at all and literally falling into the legal and constitutional vacuum and kind of abyss of just leaving without an agreement, then Remainers, like myself, will feel quite hard done by that Remain isn't a proper option. So do you have three options? Do you have a two-stager? You say, do you want to accept the package? And if they say yes, we do. And if you say no, then we go to a second stage. These are questions that people are having a lot. And I was speaking to Igor Judge, who was Lord Chief Justice of England and Wales just yesterday morning, and he was saying that this is one of the Brexit questions that troubles him the most. Actually, it's you know, at all constitutional levels, it's troubling. I think probably it could be overcome, but parliamentarians would need to settle on a question that would then need to be approved by the Electoral Commission. It would all take a lot of time, and we'd have to request more time from the European Union while we did this.
All right. Alex Dean, I appreciate you taking the time to speak to us.
Thanks very much.
Alex Dean is a political correspondent with The Prospect magazine in the United Kingdom. Spoke to us over Skype. And again, the latest is that Theresa May, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, having faced a 2-1 defeat of the exit package with the European Union that she negotiated and brought to Parliament, is hoping to negotiate something new that can win majority support by Monday.